Thank you for that introduction. Yes, I recently graduated from the University of Tennessee. I was working with Dr. Larry Steckel. I've since moved on and am now a field development rep with DuPont in Indiana and Kentucky. So I will not be working in cotton anymore, at least in the near future. But this is some of my PhD work that I did while at Tennessee. So just quickly, giant ragweed, we do have glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed in Tennessee, among other glyphosate-resistant weeds. Certainly Palmer amaranth gets the most attention in Tennessee, but our growers who do have glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed, especially in cotton, find it to be challenging. And, you know, just a brief list of some of the advantages and disadvantages of giant ragweed. A lot of the advantages are somewhat similar to Palmer. It is able to accumulate a lot of biomass in a short amount of time. It's kind of adapted, and we're seeing a wider emergence window, which makes it challenging as well. It can germinate very early in the spring, and it's been able to adapt and grow in a variety of environments. When you look at a disadvantage, you know, that's something that does kind of set it apart from Palmer. It doesn't produce a lot of seeds, and that's probably one of the reasons we don't, you know, see as many issues with it as we do with Palmer. A lot of work on giant ragweed has been done in the Midwest. It's one of the most troublesome weeds in several of the corn and soybean states in the Midwest. In corn, it is one of the most competitive weeds. That's some work out of Ohio State. And in soybean, several studies as well out of the Midwest, it is certainly one of the most competitive weeds in soybeans, with low populations reducing yield by 50% or more. But what about competition in cotton? And that's, you know, one of the things we wanted to find out with some of my work. There have been a lot of other studies that have looked at other weed species that can reduce yields at fairly low populations, you know, but again, not a weed like giant ragweed we didn't have information on. So to quickly set up the materials and methods, we conducted this study a couple years in Tennessee at our station in Jackson, and we had populations of 0 to 16 plants per plot. Those were four-row plots, and the giant ragweed was planted, a little hard to see here, but planted in the center two rows of those four-row plots. And then plots were maintained weed-free throughout the growing season, and that was mostly done by hand weeding. We took a lot of data, and I won't have time to present all of this today, but we looked at cotton height at several different intervals. We looked at a couple of maturity ratings. We took giant ragweed weights at harvest and then looked at yield as well as fiber quality. This was a randomized complete block design with four replications, and we used an ANOVA and separated means using Fisher's LSD for the cotton height, maturity, biomass, and fiber quality data. However, using the yield data, we did a hyperbolic decay model in sigma plot. And we did that for the lint yield of the center two rows where giant ragweed was directly competing with cotton, and then the border rows, those outside rows where it was indirectly competing. And I won't bring this equation up again, but the B there is the estimate of giant ragweed density at which 50% yield loss occurs, and I'll mention that again when we look at that data. So when you look at cotton height, I'll kind of set this graph up. We've got cotton height over here in inches, and then our different ragweed populations along the x-axis. The blue bars are those measurements that we took at the four-leaf stage. The yellow is at the eight-leaf, and then the green is at the 12-leaf stage. Already at the four-leaf cotton stage, we've got a cotton height reduction at just two plants per plot. Giant ragweed was already quite large at that time, and we saw a height decrease. At the eight-leaf stage, a population of four, and at the 12-leaf stage, again, a population of four plants per plot, we were already seeing an effect on cotton height. This is that model that I talked about, and these are our populations again along the bottom. And pounds per acre lint yield is over here, and this is the center two rows where giant ragweed was directly competing. Our population of zero, we had a yield of about 1,350 pounds per acre over a couple years. At just one giant ragweed plant, we already had a yield reduction of about 350 pounds to the acre. So pretty significant at such a low population. That continued to decrease. At 16 plants, we had less than 100 pounds per acre, virtually no cotton at the end of the growing season. that estimate where we had 50% yield loss, that occurred at about 2.6 plants right there. So very low population caused significant yield loss. When we look at the border rows, not as much yield loss there. We didn't have giant ragweed directly competing, but we do see for the most part a steady decrease in yield. The 50% yield loss occurred at about 18 plants, so a little bit higher than our highest population, but again, at 16 plants, we've got almost a 50% yield loss. So continue to see indirect competition as well. These are pictures that I took right prior to harvest. We removed the giant ragweed from the center two rows, and then we went ahead and harvested. And so this is our zero plot. Here's our one plot. You can't really visually see any differences there. At two plants, you'll already notice that we've got bolls missing due to competition. Four plants, it's even wider at that point. At eight plants, we've got plants that are actually missing. And then at 16, really not a lot of cotton left at that population. So in conclusion, with that study, season-long giant ragweed competition can impact cotton growth, maturity, and yield. We certainly saw that in these studies. It is a strong competitor. One plant reduced yields by 250, 300 pounds per acre. One thing I didn't present, but we actually did not see an effect on fiber quality. Part of the reason why is we actually had to remove the giant ragweed plants from the plots prior to harvest. We might have seen an effect on color or trash if we would have had those plants, in there during harvest. But certainly, controlling giant ragweed is going to be important for cotton growers to be able to maintain yield in the future. And then the other study that I'm going to talk about is another piece of my dissertation, I guess, and quickly talk about how we can control glyphosate giant ragweed in cotton. And this study has actually been recently published in Weed Technology just this past quarter. And this is a grower's field in West Tennessee. Not every grower has glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed, but he's got, three or four leaf cotton, and he's got giant ragweed that's already, a foot and a half, 2 foot tall, and continuing to emerge well into May and June. So when you look at some of the past data on what are good control options for glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed, Invoke can be effective, but that's for very small giant ragweed seedlings. Other herbicides can be effective, but that's for post-directed applications. But what about, control options earlier, post-emergence? So glufosinate is one of the better options that we do have, Liberty. And we certainly have a lot of that going out in Tennessee. This last year, about 82% of our acres received glufosinate applications, whether that was a Glatol, Liberty Link variety, or a Widestrike variety. And another thing I'd like to point out is, to my knowledge, or the last time I checked, I guess late 2012, we don't have any glufosinate-resistant broadleaf weeds. Hopefully that will remain true for some time, because it is certainly one of the better options we have. Quickly, the treatments that we had Liberty by itself, Roundup by itself, two-way combination, Staple, Roundup plus Staple, and then the three-way combination of Liberty, Roundup, and Staple. And then we had glufosinate or Liberty plus Cotteran at a pint to the acre, and that was applied to one-leaf cotton. Five-leaf cotton, we had Liberty plus Staple. We had Roundup plus Invoke, and then we had two rates of Liberty plus Cotteran at a pint to the acre and Cotteran at a quart to the acre. And then we had one treatment of Liberty followed by Liberty. We took a lot of data, and again, I won't present all of this, but we certainly looked at giant ragweed control, cotton injury, because several of these treatments can cause significant cotton injury. We took some giant ragweed counts, and then ultimately we hand harvested yield 10 foot of each plot to determine that. This was a randomized complete block design with three replications. We did do this study on a grower's field, and we used an ANOVA and SAS and separated means using Fisher's LSD. Giant ragweed control 4 weeks after that five-leaf application, and about 5.5 weeks after our one-leaf application. Not a lot of treatments were providing anywhere near 100% control. But still, about a month after that application, we were seeing a decent control with glufosinate plus Cotteran that was applied early on at the one leaf stage. And then the glufosinate plus Cotteran applications that were applied at the five leaf stage. And then certainly glufosinate followed by glufosinate had about 90% control still about a month after application. Other treatments statistically weren't different, although they're certainly lower than 80% lower than what we would like to see for giant ragweed. And this shows you a picture of a plot with glufosinate just applied one time at the one leaf stage. And we frequently see this both with whether it's giant ragweed or palmer. When you've got plants that are a little too large, we've got some dead ones here, but then we start to see some regrowth that comes back. And this one was obviously just too large for glufosinate at that point. But glufosinate followed by glufosinate, we've got several dead plants here. It really seems to be a pretty good treatment coming back about 10 days later with another shot of Liberty. When you look at lint yield, several treatments actually statistically were not different on yield. However, again, the treatments that had the highest control were right in here, and all of those were the highest yielding. And although I didn't have time to present it, that is important because we did see quite a bit of injury, especially with the post-emergence Cotteran applications, up to 30% injury or more. And despite seeing that high injury, we didn't reduce yield. So these were our highest yielding treatments. This right here, this white dotted line, would be our glyphosate-only treatment. Very poor control, as we expected. So in conclusion, we had a few treatments that did have very effective control. Glufosinate plus Cotteran at any of those timings or rates were, you know, effective treatments and were also the highest yielding. However, glufosinate followed by glufosinate was the only treatment that resulted in the highest yield and greater than 90% control. Despite that, though, certainly from a resistance management standpoint, you know, we would like to see more than just glufosinate utilized, whether it's giant ragweed or palmer amaranth or whatever weed we're talking about. But certainly, I think, you know, this could be taken further and look at sequential applications. I think that was probably the key there. We were looking at one-shot post-emergence for the most part, but sequential applications will certainly be key to be able to control glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed in the future. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. I've got a minute or two.
Any questions for Kelly?
Yeah, I didn't have time to mention the rates, but it was a 29-ounce rate of Liberty across the board. Everything else would be considered a 1X rate except those Cotteran rates. That's why I mentioned those. So, yeah, 29. Yep. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, the question was, do we see giant ragweed in ditch banks a lot in Tennessee? And we still do. And I've got lots of really good pictures I didn't have time to show, but we still have a lot of fields. A lot of time, this grower's field, it's pretty widespread out into the field, but we've got a lot of growers that will drive by and they've got it in the ditch banks. It's creeping in right on the edges, and then it just slowly works its way in. But we do. We still have a lot that are in the ditch banks, but we've slowly seen this adaptation, and it's been able to move into agronomic fields. And certainly, there you could do a lot of work with giant ragweed. Pretty fascinating. So, yeah. One thing we did compare is we looked at emergence patterns of of seeds from giant ragweed plants that were on fence rows or ditch banks versus agronomic, and I didn't present that work. We do appear to see a difference there in that emergence window. We do see a longer emergence window with those agronomic populations. That was the only work that we did comparing those two, but yeah, you could do a lot of work there. But yeah, we did see some differences in emergence. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.